Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, the rule of nobody, how the law thwarts human judgment.
An employee may not use contract airline rail passenger service provided under the contract with the General Services Administration, see Part 301-15, subpart B of this chapter.
Donna from The West Wing, remember that scene? Author Philip K. Howard today on his book, The Rule of Nobody. Also today, Airbnb goes to court and is renting the new owning, how the math is changing on whether to buy a home in America. But first, the FCC proposed new rules yesterday that may mean only big changes for anyone who uses the internet. And this comes just after that Supreme Court hearing earlier this week that could dramatically change the way we watch TV. So here with me now to discuss these potentially big changes to the media landscape and what they might mean for all of us, including democracy, journalism, David Carr, media columnist and culture reporter for The New York Times, and Nancy Scola, a freelance reporter who covers tech, politics, and policy. Welcome back, David. Welcome back, Nancy. Good morning.
Morning, Brian.
Nice to be with you, Brian.
So let's start with these new rules that the FCC is proposing to allow companies to basically pay internet service providers for privileged pipes, faster pipes, so that streaming Netflix video, for example, stays nice and fast and faster than some other guys. David, I guess big companies will pay for it. So does this mean we're entering a new era of first and second class citizens on the internet?
Yeah, it seems like there's going to kind of be an internet over the internet. There's going to be good internet and bad internet. And the last mile delivery, which is what the FCC is really addressing, there was an appeals court struck down a decision.
Can I stop you right there so people don't get lost in jargon? Last mile internet, in other words, like from Time Warner to your house.
Yeah, the internet is out there and it's a big grid, but a lot can happen in terms of what happens at the end of that connection, in terms of how fast those streaming speeds are, and what that translates to the consumer is, does my Netflix movie stutter or not?
Uh-huh.
Is it a good viewing experience or not? And what the FCC is saying, it's okay to make a business arrangement to ensure that stream stays strong. And people worry, well, what if you're not a big company and can't afford to pay the freight?
So, Nancy, do you agree that there would be what David just called a good internet and a bad internet? Will people notice a big difference in internet speed and whether a movie keeps hiccuping or anything, you know, depending on the site and how much they're paying the internet service provider?
Yeah, the argument is that they will. We will see better performance with things like Netflix. One of the strongest arguments in favor of this approach is that you're downloading a Netflix movie. It's a Saturday night. Everyone else is downloading their Netflix movies, and you're not going to see the same sort of stutter, as David mentioned, that you had seen in the past. So for the consumer, I think that's one of the sort of appealing parts of this approach in the short term, is that you're going to see a slightly better performance.
Because if we never see the word buffering again on our screens, it'll be too soon. On the other hand, does it create first and second class citizens, in your opinion, in a way that threatens us in any way?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is concerning. I think, the one of the strongest arguments against it is that you're not going to have the next Netflix. You're not going to have a competitor service come in and be able to pay have the same infrastructure that Netflix does. And that's going to be we might not consciously notice that this new Netflix 2 service is slightly slower, but it is slightly slower. And so we just stick with what we have. And that's concerning because the internet was supposed to be about open innovation.
And David, even beyond that, I mean, I don't really care personally too much who has a leg up in selling us movies and whether it's Netflix or whether there's some new startup that has an easier or harder time popping up to compete with Netflix. What I want to know is, how does this affect democracy by affecting journalism? Like, if I'm Fox News or MSNBC, I can buy those faster pipes for my news content. If I'm a little independent public radio station, maybe I can't. So will the system also bias the whole internet toward the delivery of deep-pocketed corporate news?
I think that, as Nancy points out, concerning, I think, is a really good word. We don't know exactly how it's going to play out. I mean, on one level, you could see the FCC's logic where they would look at, say, a Netflix and say, well, you're using 40% of the capacity in the system. You should pay. And that might clear away some spectrum. There's some bandwidth for other less deep-pocketed groups. But it does sort of put the carrier in the position of picking and choosing, and they're always going to pick the people who've got the most loot, I think.
Listeners, do you want to weigh in or ask a question about these various ways that our media experience may be about to change? We can get into the Aereo Supreme Court case, which we will in a minute with Nancy Scola and David Carr, or talk about the FCC's turnaround, because this is really a turnaround for the Obama administration on this principle known as net neutrality. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And Nancy, isn't this just the kind of thing the Obama administration and its FCC were trying to prevent from happening? The administration had said it wanted to preserve equal internet access or net neutrality. Why did they flip?
Well, unfortunately, I think the real answer here is kinda. It's kind of what they promised not to have happen. If you talk to network engineers, they'll tell you that these peering arrangements, which is really what we're talking about here, paid peering arrangements, where companies are paying a bit extra to get a little bit more of a streamlined entry onto the internet, is happening in a way. So, you know, I think there might be some angry calls about this, but one of the selling points of this approach is we're going to know about it. So there's a transparency aspect, supposedly, from what we're hearing reported, baked into what the FCC is going to do here. If you are peering, you're going to have to let us know about it. So that might be a little bit, you know, better than the system that we already have.
David, same question. Is this a flip-flop for the Obama administration?
They kind of got cornered by the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals said, you're acting like the internet is a public utility, and me and a lot of other folks would say, yes, please do.
The internet isn't a public utility?
It is not. It is not a public utility in the eyes of the law and the appeals court. I mean, Nancy probably knows more about this than I do, but it's a civic good that's actually, you know, privately held for at least in terms of the delivery to consumers. And they got cornered by the Court of Appeals and said you cannot treat it like a public utility. And so it with that sort of law, it becomes hard to do net neutrality in sort of practical ways.
So, Nancy, let me go down a pecking order here. Our energy wires, where we get our electricity, that's public utility, right?
In many cases, yes.
How about telephone wires, landline wires, public utility?
That's the distinction, yes. So, you know, I'd push back slightly on the premise of the question. I think they cornered themselves in some ways. The first commissioner that President Obama appointed decided not to take that public utility approach, crafted some rules that even at the time, many of us, myself included, said it was a little bit of a makeshift solution. He tried to pick this middle path. Didn't work so well. And the court struck him down, which was not at all unexpected. So, you know, this is a position that they've sort of created for themselves. So, yes, telephones, that a lot of people said, let's start thinking about the internet in those terms. And that's what they chose not to do.
How about the cable company cables themselves for television service? Is that considered a public utility?
No. It's regulated differently under the law.
That's about where the line is.
The distinction here is yes.
So the telephone wires, yes. The energy system, yes. The energy grid, but not the cable system. And it's the cable system that's providing so much of people's internet service now.
Yes.
So technically not a public utility unless the Obama administration decided to try to push that issue, which you're both telling us they decided not to. John in North Plainfield, you're on WNYC. Good morning, John.
Hey, good morning, sir. How are you?
Okay.
Kind of relatively new to this net neutrality, but it sounds like the war drums of encroachment are constantly being beaten. And what I mean by that is, you know, let's just say you have a Fox News that spends, you know, millions of dollars to get this bandwidth, and you have a small radio station that says, hey, I should be allowed to travel on that highway. Well, I mean, that's kind of encroachment. I mean, I consider that private property. So the idea that encroachment it should be the first step, I think, is kind of off base. There's no reason why small radio stations can't come together, band together, and buy bandwidth, if you will, and have the same ability to get their message out as, like, the larger news stations such as Fox News.
Well, in an ideal world, maybe a lot of small independent radio stations would have the wherewithal to do that. I don't know if in the real world they actually do. But I don't know. Nancy, do you want to weigh in on this? Is this, a parade of horribles that I'm overly concerned about? Because I am concerned about it. This is where my thought process always goes, is what about news delivery, and therefore what about the implications for democracy if corporate news can buy its way to people's eyeballs on the web more fast and more, more quickly and more easily than independent news sources?
Yeah, I think one of the reasons that this neutrality news is getting more attention than it might otherwise have gotten is because of this Comcast-Time Warner cable merger that's also happening.
Tell us how that relates.
So Time Warner Time Warner Cable and Comcast are merging. It's a $45 billion deal. It looks, the word on the street is that it's inevitable. We'll see if that happens. But the concerning thing is that you end up with 2/3 of American cable subscribers sort of, being customers of one company. If you combine that with the idea that then your internet service provider can make choices about what content you're getting more quickly than other content, and you have one company making those decisions, and that one company is largely run by one family and one person, you can go quickly down that parade of
David,
horribles.
David, do you also want to weigh in on the Comcast-Time Warner merger proposal, which I guess turns two giant internet service providers into an even more giant single one? Are these related developments, this and the FCC decision?
What Nancy said was beautifully said. I would only add that in terms of, like, how things are changing, I think it was Steve Jobs or somebody in the Valley said change takes a long time and then comes all at once. And in this instance, you've got a huge roll-up between two of the biggest cable companies in America. You got the FCC pivoting in terms of what net neutrality means, and then you've got Aereo trying to make the argument that they should be able to use the internet to broadcast television that comes over the airwaves. It's a really busy, interesting time in terms of how these things play out. That Comcast has they've been very scrupulous about saying, well, we won't have but a third of the cable subscribers. Of course, that's not the important number. It's as we've seen more and more, programming is delivered over broadband, and Comcast will be, if the merger goes through, passing, over 70% of American homes with their wires. And as Nancy points out, it's going to be sort of one company, one family, they've shown themselves to be they run a good company, they run a good show, but should that kind of power and authority be centralized in any private company?
And as we talk about this very interesting week in these very interesting times in the changing media landscape with David Carr from The New York Times and freelance journalist Nancy Scola, Rob in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Rob, thanks for calling in.
Hi. I'm calling because I used to run a media startup, and I've worked with a variety of online media companies. And I was very surprised to hear you separate the idea of innovation and sort of free market capitalism at the startup level and the birth of competitors to Netflix and others from the basic sense of democracy and sort of the free market of ideas. Because I think, at least in principle, in this country, the two are entirely intertwined and interdependent.
I basically agree with you, and I don't want to make too much of that distinction. All I was saying was I was less concerned with the delivery of movies than I am with the delivery of news,
sure,
which doesn't seem to be the content of the headline descriptions of this FCC ruling.
Well, and I think that is valid in many ways. I think, though, when it comes to a lot of the gray areas of, say, documentaries and informational programming, there is a lot of crossover there. But
totally, we agree.
The other thing too is that I wonder about, as we move more and more to crowdsourced journalism and independent journalism, which right now can bubble up to the top very easily when live events are happening. You know, a live stream from somebody's phone on the ground has the same network capability as a live stream from Fox News, and I think that's also hugely valuable. But there was the one other thing that sort of interested me was a comment earlier, and I could be wrong about the quote, but I think I believe it came from the FCC chairman, was a highway analogy. And the idea that, you know, Netflix uses the highways for its trucks more than other providers, and therefore they should pay. But the funny thing is that the interstate highway system is not a toll system. In fact, it's designed for the consumers to pay. The end user pays for what they receive. And right now, the end user can buy a T1 line. You can buy into a high-end cable subscription that guarantees seamless delivery of Netflix with no buffering. It's still a consumer choice at this point. There's no need for Netflix to pay for that.
Uh-huh. That's an interesting use of their toll road analogy. Nancy, what do you think about it?
There's a lot of different pieces that, again, as I mentioned earlier, companies are paying to put their content on the internet. Netflix's internet bill is bigger than mine. They're already connecting to sort of shovel all that content onto the internet. There, in some ways, what this peering that's newly being made possible in public is building a road parallel to the interstate highways so they can get there more quickly to the interchange where the rest of us are gathered, if that makes any sense. It's one of these things. I hate sometimes to get into the details of this, but the details are hugely important. So what the FCC is sort of opening up is saying, okay, Netflix, if you want to sort of speed up, meet us at the interchanges, that's okay now, and we're going to put up signs letting people know what's happening.
And David, I guess in a way, maybe the end user, we the consumers, pay either way, because if Netflix is paying internet service providers more to shovel more content at faster speeds through their pipes, they're going to charge us more for the product. So I don't know if that's any different than Netflix paying the same and making us, each person by person, having to buy faster and faster internet connections. Is it?
Yeah, as your caller points out, we live in a democracy, and it's also one built on capitalism, and costs inexorably end up landing on the consumer. You know, Netflix is looking at a price increase. Amazon, which delivers a fair amount of video over the internet, has talked about upping the cost of their Prime membership. So we know who's going to end up paying for this in the end, that it's going to be us. And we may well end up with a better experience, but it's we're always going to be the ones who end up paying.
So let me connect this, or see if you think it does connect, to that other story this week that you mentioned. There was a hearing at the Supreme Court about a relatively small company called Aereo, which is at odds with the big broadcast networks. Aereo lets customers stream broadcast TV on smartphones or TVs or computers with a tiny delay, and they don't pay the networks anything. So the question in front of the court is basically, is Aereo a hardware company, as it claims, or a pirate cable company of sorts, as the TV networks claim? But what I want to know, David, is for all the hoo-ha over Aereo at the Supreme Court and that legal question, all they pull in is free over-the-air television signals, no cable channels, no HBO, no ESPN, no cable news. So in today's media landscape, who cares if all they're pulling in is, you know, ABC, NBC, CBS, and Fox, basically?
Well, that's where a lot of the money is. In you know, broadcast is still a huge, huge business, and they make $3 billion, $4 billion in retransmission fees. I can tell you there is a lot at stake, because I went to the hearing myself, and the general counsels and chief executives of many major media companies were there and on the edge of their seat. A lot of it is at stake in terms of money. And then there's also the sort of broader existential threat of if programming starts to go not through the cable box but over the top, then all the chips are sort of in the air. And that brings us to one other story this week, which is HBO announcing, look, if you want some of our back programs, you're going to be able to get them on Amazon. It's the first time HBO has kind of left the cable ecosystem. So you can see the bundle, what we call the bundle, which is, the cable comes to your house and you have to buy this broad array of services, even though maybe you don't care about ESPN, you're going to pay for it, or you don't want MSNBC, you're still paying for it. And it's starting to be pulled apart. And the idea that Ariel could get you your broadcast, and then you could lay in a Netflix, or you could lay in an Amazon Prime or a Hulu, and start to assemble a viewing experience at your house that really has nothing to do with cable per se. It comes over broadband. So it's a pretty big deal.
What was it like being in the Supreme Court for this hearing, David? Did the, octogenarian justices sort of get the interwebs enough to even ask good questions?
Well, we'll have to walk by the fact that it was my first time in the Supreme Court, and I practically skipped my way in there. I was so excited. I was seated as far out as you can be and obstructed in the extreme, but I eventually made my way to a seat where I could see five of the justices, and I was struck by the fact that these guys grew up watching MASH over rabbit ears, and we were deep in the weeds. And some of the justices, what does this mean? Well, can they just grab HBO? No, HBO is cable. Again, you saw a kind of, they were trying to figure out what was going on, trying to figure out what it meant. But I don't know that they have a full grasp of the world that we're living in.
Nancy, you're nodding.
Well, just real quickly, add in the fact that Aereo is not available in Washington, D.C. This isn't something that they've even had a chance to play with.
Oh, it's just in certain markets. Is it in New York?
Yes, it sure is. But it's one of the quirks of, this is a local this is using the internet to tap into local broadcasting, and people still want to do it. I mean,
how do they make money? Do they charge us?
Yeah, $8 a month for their regular service, $12 for a slightly premium version. Yes.
Brian, Nancy, the thing is, when you say, well, what's the big deal, broadcast, you got to realize that's where the NFL lives.
Absolutely.
It's like where all the money is in television. People will fight like crazy.
But they don't have the yes. They don't have the Yes Network, so you can't see the Yankees pitchers cheat.
And they, sometimes we forget too. It's I was looking at Pew numbers. They're research center in D.C. and 3/4 of American adults watch local news still, and that's something they're getting over local broadcast television.
Tom in Hempstead, you're on WNYC. Hi, Tom.
Yep.
Hi, you're on. Go for it, Tom.
Okay. Hello?
Yeah, you're the star now.
Yes, hi. Well, a long-time listener.
Thanks, Tom.
As I've noticed in a lot of regulations and laws that have been passed through various agencies in Congress, et cetera, the devil is in the details. Is there any wording in this regulation that will protect the consumer from being either discriminated upon with the speed of the pipe or and being forced to pay higher pricing? Because that's usually the problem with most laws.
Do you get the question, Nancy?
I think so, and I think there's a couple answers. One is we don't know yet. The fellow, Tom Wheeler is the chairman of the FCC. This is his proposal. His fellow commissioners are seeing it today. We won't see it until May 15. This is just leaked reports we're getting. So we don't know some of the details. Chairman Wheeler has promised that the final rules, as far as he has anything to do with it, will follow these non-discrimination approaches that he has championed in the past. So, I mean, in terms of paying for faster pipes, we already do. I mean, you have the right now to go to Time Warner and pay for slightly faster internet. So I think, I don't know that anything on that end is going to be changed.
And just to say, David, in arguing that it's not shirking its regulatory responsibility, the FCC said that internet service providers would still be required to act in a, quote, commercially reasonable manner. Do you find this?
That's a weird standard, isn't it?
Commercially reasonable. So you find this as laughably meaningless as some of the other critics I've been reading?
Well, there's just a lot of wiggle room in there, and it does put the onus on consumer. To the caller's point in terms of Are we being looked after? Are we being protected? I don't know what his cable bill is, but mine's pretty high. And it feels like, you know, the horse is still out of the barn. At Christmas time, when everybody started loading up their new devices and the internet sagged on my street, and yes, I ponied up and gave Verizon Fios more money for faster internet just because I couldn't stand it.
We will have to leave it there for today, whether you can stand it or not. My guests have been New York Times media columnist David Carr, who, by the way, is being awarded a Career Achievement Award from the James Aronson Awards for Social Justice Journalism at Hunter College. Do you think writing about all this media use is social justice journalism, David?
I was surprised and deeply honored to learn it was, Brian.
And there is his acceptance speech. I'm surprised and deeply honored to find myself in this position for writing what? And Nancy Scola, freelance journalist who covers these issues. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Pleasure.